You're listening to IsraelScene.com. I'm Steve, and today we have a very interesting guest, someone I consider a friend who I know from Woodstock, New York. It's Zohar Zemach, and he's. I'll read a small bio from him. He's formerly a staff sergeant in the Israeli Army and an advertising executive in corporate America. Zohar has shifted his energies from war and consumerism into healing. That's always good. He's founder and director of the Alok Holistic Health Community in New York City and has taught and counseled at the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. Zohar is a board-certified holistic health counselor through the American Association of Drugless Practitioners, AADP, and member of PsyChai, American National Honor Society in Psychology. He's the author of the book Stepping Onion and the primary contributor for the monthly Alok Holistic Health Newsletter, which combines holistic health with poetic stories and celebration. He also has workshops and combines nutrition and health with spirituality, meditation, and life celebration. Wow, that's a great intro. Welcome.
Thank you.
So we go back to Woodstock. I mean, obviously you're in Israel. You were born here. What were you doing in New York?
In 1989, I was living the Tel Aviv lifestyle, as you know it now. Tel Aviv is a very happening city, and even in 1989, it was an active nightlife city, and I was very much into nightlife. I was pretty much into living in Tel Aviv. I never thought of leaving Tel Aviv, going to another country, even to visit. Taking me out of Tel Aviv even to Ramat HaSharon or Haifa would be a very tough mission. My life was centered around a few blocks in Tel Aviv, in Yonanavi, Allenby. That's where my life was. I lived in a loft. It was back then in 1989, nobody knew what a loft was in Tel Aviv. I just happened that space. I happened to find a space that used to be a diamond workshop in the past.
Oh, how interesting.
And people felt very uncomfortable when they came into that space because it was not familiar. Those very high ceilings, a place that had bars all over. When you opened the door, it was a metal door that you would open with a buzzer, and then there was another gate, a metal gate.
Yeah, and precious stones.
And there was the hole in the wall for where the safe used to be. And people found it very strange, but now even in Tel Aviv, people really looking to find loft spaces. In New York, people been knowing it for a long time too, how cool it is to have a loft and throw loft parties. And so everything was revolving around those few blocks. I used to work as a waiter in a restaurant that was on the block. The bar I used to go to was on the block. The club was on the block. Everything, the place we used to go for gambling, backgammon, was on the block. Who needed anything else? Yeah, and you walk a little bit to the beach, and that's it. So that was life back then. I wouldn't say that I was happy. I just thought that there's nothing else that can be more interesting than that. Of course, looking back now, I was in my early 20s, it looks pretty pathetic. And my father happened to be in New York on a business visit, and he had a heart attack. So I didn't have much choice. I had to go to travel to New York to be with him a little bit until he would be capable of flying back to Israel. I really didn't want to go there. What would I do in New York? To leave the block, to leave the bar, to leave the gambling, backgammon gambling. After few days, I discovered the New York nightlife.
My goodness.
Which was much bigger and much more exciting than Tel Aviv nightlife. So I said, okay, I need to find a way how to move here. And Israelis cannot just move to New York. You need a visa. And the solution was actually to become a student in a university in order to get a student visa. Now, if you register for a university, you need to go to classes. You can't just be signed up as a student to have the visa and not attend classes. So I attended classes, and I said, I might as well study something practical just so I will get a profession. I can't stay a waiter for the rest of my life. So I went and studied advertising, studied also clinical psychology.
They go hand in hand.
Yeah. Yeah, later on I found out that, yes, sure they do. And one thing led to another. I became a student, and student life gradually shifted me away from nightlife, which was a good rehab opportunity. Mm-hmm. And 2 weeks after graduation, I already was hired to work in an advertising agency that was... they described us as the UN of the advertising world. We used to do advertising in for all cultures and languages, which was interesting because everybody there was from a different country. And with the prosperity of that time, the agency went from 40 employees when I joined into 250 employees within less than a year.
My goodness.
One thing led to another, and I spent 7 years of my life in advertising agencies. And at first, it was exciting. Production and meetings and all the creative ads that we've been creating and commercials and filming and hanging out with clients and taking them in limos into fancy restaurants and clubs again, because my clients also enjoyed the nightlife where I would take them. In a way, it felt a little bit like being a pimp for the clients. For the birthday of one of them, I hired a recording studio with all the music instruments, and nobody knew how to play any instrument, but we just went there for an hour and jammed.
Wow.
On drums and keyboards and
guitar.
What
a great idea.
Yeah, with a lot of booze for them. I mean, that's part of the advertising world. And they were happy. At the same time, gradually it stopped...
It definitely stopped being interesting.
And it's funny because objectively things became more interesting with the different project I was involved with, like project with the American government to do the advertising campaign for the U.S. Census. At the same time, it was a lot of interesting opportunities to speak in front of members of Congress, to present them the materials, to meet with Secretary of Commerce back then under the Clinton administration. It's not something that you always get to do. I would find myself also during that time participating in some events and demonstrations in D.C. against the WTC, the World Trade Organization.
And why were you against the World Trade Organization?
All the use of resources in the world that actually all the third world countries are becoming just suppliers of goods and of labor. It's the dilemma started arising in me while I was in advertising. And I remember the head of the advertising planning department. We always used to have discussions about that. And he said, if there's a sick child in a remote village, I can help as a first world country, and I can help in paving a main road, a good quality road that will get her faster to the hospital. Then I'm doing a good thing. It's one way of looking at it. This relationship between the West and the third world is happening usually through non-profit organizations that come and, for example, bring new systems for watering, new methods for cultivating crops in a most efficient way and still not a harmful way.
So let's fast forward. You worked for the advertising agency for how long?
It was several, you know, with advertising, you become kind of like you become like a prostitute. Mm-hmm. People, other agencies buy you because whenever our agency was sold to another agency, so I was sold, not like somebody from a third world country with chains on my feet. Jeez. I was sold to another agency. I was smart enough or understand that within the system that I lived in, every time I'm being sold, I should also get a higher price. For myself, whoever sold the agency got a lot of many millions, and I allowed it to increase it for a few thousands, my rate. And within the advertising world, I started having those dilemmas, like I stated with flying to DC and all the waste. And at the same time, I've been asked to work on different accounts that I found it more and more challenging to work on. I've been asked to work on the U.S. Army account. They were so happy to see on my resume that I was a staff sergeant in the Israeli army, and here I am an advertising executive. What a great combination. You can be great for the U.S. Army. And the job would actually to make more young minorities in the U.S. Join the army. I couldn't do it. I refused. I had to turn it down. Next, I was asked to work on some junk food account. And I said to myself, I'm not eating it. How can I make others eat it? During those years in advertising, I started doing yoga. A friend of mine told me, you seem to be very tense. You should do yoga. Yoga? What is yoga? I had no idea what yoga is. Go try. She sent me to a place. There was a man that would give once a week a yoga class in the East Village for free. I went in. I had no idea what we're doing. He put us in different postures. It was in a dark room with candles. We did some om sounds, and it was weird. But the body felt good, and also felt more relaxed. So I started coming every week. After a while, I wanted more. So I found another place that was open daily, so I can go more. And then I found myself practicing yoga 4 times a week. And still, I'm in the advertising agency. Some of my clients started joining in one of my of the classes. A teacher, a yoga teacher, read for us at the beginning of class from John Robbins' book, A Diet for a New America, that described a lot of the meat industry and how it creates waste in the world, besides all the suffering of the animals. And I remember walking down the stairs after this class, knowing that I'm not eating meat now. You see, yoga screwed me up. I lost my job. I lost my steaks and burgers. Terrible. Don't try. Everybody at home listening to it, do not try this at home, or do not go into yoga studios. It would make you healthier, and it would make you want to eat healthier. It's terrible. And now I'm realizing, because now I'm a health counselor, and I see a lot of the relationship between what we eat and how we feel and what we think. Because it's not only that we can feel not the optimum that we can feel when we load ourselves with sugar and coffee versus if we eat vegetables. Also, our thoughts will be different, because energetically, what is food? Cells become cells. So I realized those energies, that the less I ate things that used to harm me, all of a sudden, consciously, I couldn't do certain things that before, no problems. You want me to promote a big burger franchise? No problem. You want me to promote some soft drinks that's bubbly and in one can there are 10 teaspoons of sugar? No problem. I couldn't do it anymore. So I decided I'll work only on advertising services like the census or telecommunications. People need to speak to each other. It's good. Reach out and touch someone, right? We've been programmed on that back in the 80s. That's not doing any damage. So I was able to do it for a while. And then even that could not be the life that I wanted for myself, to be inside an agency that the job is to increase more profits, more sales. It didn't feel like the right environment, and I found myself completely confused. Here I am, thinking that here I am
on top of the world.
On top of the world, in my office, overlooking the Empire State Building, climbed up in the corporate ladder. In a way, I had a comfortable job. I did not need to work crazy hours because I structured it in that way. And feeling that I'm dying, just not me. And I tried to look at the bright side, because I would go to yoga in the morning or right after work. I would rollerblade into work. And I thought, and some friends told me, you know, it's important that you stick around because you can bring some influence. So it didn't resonate with me. I thought for a while, some of my clients, I started taking them for those business meetings into vegetarian restaurants or organic restaurants, and they started loving it. And some of them started doing yoga. So you know, we are affecting the circles that are around us. That's great. But at the same time, it's not, there's more to it. It's doing more of like... On a volunteer basis, outside of work, where I can really contribute more full time. At the same time, also I with the very humid New York summers, I found myself to be very, very congested. I couldn't breathe from my nose, especially at night. I would just wake up at night and see that I'm just breathing through my mouth instead of through my nostrils. So I went to the doctor, and the doctor sent me to the top New York ear, nose, and throat specialist. She was very nice, and she told me, look, you have this problem, and here there's some inhaler that I'll give you a sample of it, and then I'll give you the prescription, and you can continue to buy those. But here, the first one is for free, so you get to try it. And then she gave me some free pills. You don't need to pay for it, but here's a prescription for those pills.
When they run out.
And basically, it's no problem because you have this inhaler and you have these pills, and you're just going to take them for life. That's it. Simple. Okay. She sent me also to an MRI that cost $3,000. I did not have to buy it because I had health insurance. So the part of the, I was working in an ad agency. We had health insurance. I'm going to have this beautiful inhaler that was in beautiful green and white color. Everything comes in beautiful, pretty packages. That the advertising for this product, by the way, was very, very clever. The advertising on TV. It used to be with you would see a big green field and trees and two people running in the field, happy and jumping. And in the background, the soundtrack would be Louis Armstrong's What a Wonderful World. It's very clever because they did studies that in advertising, if you show people suffering, and it's less attractive. But if you're showing this green, you're creating the image of in people's head, hey, I can really be happy in a field without allergies and just run around. And all I need to do is use my beautiful green and white inhaler that comes in the same colors of this commercial on TV, the green and the white.
So when did you wake up and decide you weren't going to participate in the chemicals?
So a few days later in a yoga class, there was a guy that worked for Reuters. He was a suit working at Reuters, but he was also practicing yoga with me. He was a suit. I was a suit. And I told him about, you know, what happened to me, and now I'm taking these pills. And he said, maybe you should quit eating dairy and see what happens. Stop eating dairy? Why? What's the relationship? Try, he said. So I cut dairy.
Miracles of miracles.
And surprise, surprise. All of a sudden, no need for the beautiful, what a wonderful world inhaler, and no need for those pills for life. My sinuses started opening. I was able to breathe just because I stopped eating dairy. Now, this fascinated me. It made me angry on one side. How come that the top New York ear, nose, and throat specialist did not even bother ask me, what are you eating?
Because they're not interested in changing your lifestyle. That's what I find interesting.
It makes a lot of sense. They don't want to push on you a different lifestyle as a part of, even we can look at it from a positive point of view, in order not to push on you something that you don't want maybe. But at the same time, once you start popping pills, your lifestyle also starts changing.
Totally and completely.
Because the internal organs start suffering. It clogs the liver, which then affects the kidneys, and so on and so on. So your lifestyle actually goes bad as a result of the fear of not wanting to change your lifestyle. And at the same time, it's also ignorant. They don't know the relationship, a lot of those doctors. So it was fascinating for me how she never bothered to ask me. And even, you know what, don't change my lifestyle, but open my eyes and say, you know, maybe if you make some dietary changes, but it's up to you whether you want to take pills or to do that or stop eating dairy. At the same time, it sparked something in me that wanted to examine it more. I wanted to, I felt that I like working with people. I want to find out more about healing modalities. I'm already doing yoga, but if food, if just one ingredient, if cutting dairy, what else is there of other things that maybe our society feeds on that's not beneficial? And maybe there are so many other things that are beneficial and we don't even know about. It was a challenging time.
It's interesting that when I was in the States and I would have a problem and I'd go to a doctor, even in Woodstock, for example, what I found interesting is never once did they recommend that I go see a nutritionist. We come here to live, And all of a sudden, we go to the you know, your main doctor, and they want to, you know, give you tests and see how you're, you know, get you a baseline. The first thing they say, oh, this is a little high, go see a nutritionist. That's amazing. And you go to a nutritionist, and a nutritionist is right there with you. It tells you, you know, well, you know what? You have X, Y, and Z possibilities. I would say lay off red meat, lay off, you know, milk products, you know, especially whatever age you may be or whatever. See how it is. Let's take a blood test later and see if, in fact, it helped. There was nothing, never, once in all the time I had been in New York, did anybody ever recommend a nutritionist. It's just interesting.
It's not the medical system. It's Israel is a fascinating country. They say that once an Indian guy in India asked one Israeli tourist, one of those backpackers, how many Israelis are there? And the Israeli said 6 million. He said, how come 6 million only? I saw already 2 million just in India. And what happens is it's kind of like the way young Israelis live is that after the army, many of them go traveling, including to the Far East. And there's a lot of Far East influence on Israel, whether it's on the clothing, the music. It's something that starts spreading all over the Western world right now because many famous musicians will now include some Indian music influences and music tracks always do sampling of music from India and from other cultures. All this world music thing, a lot of it comes from Indian influence. Part of it is that many Israelis have been exposed to alternative healing modalities in India. It started from yoga, but it doesn't. It starts in yoga and it doesn't end there. I warned you before.
See, it's an addiction.
It is, and so many Israelis want to be working on those fields. So you have so many schools of alternative medicine school in Israel. So relatively, proportionally to the small population of Israel, it's as if, it's not really the statistic, but it's as if every third young Israeli is studying to become a healer, whether a massage practitioner or a Reiki master or a naturopath or any other thing to do with alternative health. There's big schools in Israel that some of them have 7 franchises all over the country. I don't know if I wouldn't even call it a franchise, 7 branches.
Branches.
And Israel is a small country. So much is happening here. So it started affecting also the medical system.
That's wonderful.
And now in every Kupat Cholim in Israel, how would you say Kupat Cholim?
The health
clinics.
Clinics, right.
That people have health insurance from the government. They have now also clinics where you go and get a nutritionist or Reiki even, Reiki in hospitals.
Alternative medicine is fully mainstream here.
Yeah.
It's accepted completely.
Compared to America, it's very advanced.
You got involved in nutrition and health in New York. You opened then up a clinic, and you want to just share briefly about the clinic at www.alokhealth.com. And there you have a variety of practitioners in all different fields that you seem to have joined forces with. You want to speak about that a little, or?
Yeah, so I, while being in the advertising world, I started actively seeking a place that will give me tools for my new direction in life. I knew I can't stay there. I have to, and I found a school, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, and I went to an orientation night, and right there, I signed up. It was enough, these 3 hours that they presented to us, what's happening in the medical field and in the alternative health and how we can be of help to ourselves and others. I said, this is exactly what I've been looking for. Just to share with the listeners that when I joined that school, we were 40 students. And now, 8 years later, that school has 1,250 students.
Amazing.
That's an amazing growth. It shows that more people are seeking to jump out of that system that actually is not healing and to heal themselves and might as well heal their family and friends or even choose it as a profession. whatever people want to do. So I was studying while still being working in advertising, which was perfect because I was not worried about what will happen. And I decided that upon graduation, I'm resigning. And after graduation, I started working as a health counselor. Things, in a way, I know that nothing just happens for no reason. But if people started touching base with me, they say, hey, look, we're offering these things. And we are Reiki masters and we're offering Reiki workshops. Other people said, we're offering cooking classes. A community started forming. And the center was born. And that center was a place where I personally used to work from, offering health consultations. And the way I work with people was to meet with them once every other week. We call it the six-month program. The benefit of the six-month program is not that you're coming the same way you can come to a doctor and tell you this pill. If you go to a nutritionist with the intention, or a registered dietitian, and the intention that they'll give you a list of what to eat, eat A, B, C, D, E, F, G, don't eat X, Y, Z. It doesn't work this way because mm-hmm. it's becoming just a shopping list, a do and don't do list. We still have problems with dealing with the 10 commandments, right? It's only 10. Yeah. So all of a sudden to give people a list of eat and don't eat, a list of how to live my life, I realize it needs to be a process. And when we meet every other week, it gives enough time between sessions, a two-week period, for people to start implement recommendations and see what worked for them, what didn't, what they like, what they enjoyed, what didn't vibe with them, whether it's taste-wise or it's too hard. And with
so you
that,
become a life coach, in a sense, or a nutritional coach.
A nutritional coach, yes. Which is a life coach.
Which is a life coach.
It's the same. Right. Like we spoke about the sales energy. Yes. Sales become sales. Yes. And gradually, people's life shift. And I warn them, life, your lifestyle is about to change. So if you're ready for a change in lifestyle, for whether it's a new career, a new relationship, who knows what? Because once there's more clarity, once our mind is not clogged with dairy and sugar and processed foods and preservatives and all those things, we have clarity and we're more connected to what we want, which can be painful because all of a sudden we're realizing what we live right now is not the way we want to live. But we are courageous and we get more confident and courage and life energy from the food we eat, and we were able to make those changes. And to be in that process, to see how people shift and move away from an unhealthy relationship into a healthy one, find the job of their life, it allows people to be connected more to the intuition, not only with what they eat, but also what they want. What can be a greater gift than that?